Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today we've got a really cool interview because I basically go through everything someone would possibly need, no matter what stage in the game you're at, to build a dating funnel and then execute on that funnel and then even go into something more advanced like advanced social circle game. So if you're a returning listener, welcome back. If not, please subscribe. And the gentleman who interviewed me for this podcast had terrible mic quality and bad video too. So I've brought on a sexy Slavic speaker to ask the questions instead. I hope you enjoy her voice.
How did you become a dating coach?
Sure. I can tell you a brief story about how I got into being a dating coach. When people ask me what I do, I usually tell them that I'm kind of like Will Smith in the movie Hitch. Have you ever seen that movie?
I haven't. Yeah, I need to check that out.
Yeah. In the movie, he's a dating and relationship coach. And the way I got into this crazy line of work was I was never like totally clueless when it came to women and dating and confidence. But when I finished college, university, I kind of felt like I didn't know what I was doing as far as dating went, because before that time, I'd always met women through, you know, my university classes or in high school or through my sort of friend groups. But when I started working and, you know, showing up to an office and having a 9-to-5 job in banking, I just didn't really understand like how I was supposed to like go on quote unquote dates. So I started going online and researching like dating advice and how to behave on a date and, you know, what are some of the best practices. And I ended up finding this whole crazy world, this whole like underground pickup scene and all these other personal growth gurus. And I just became kind of obsessed with the topic because I had never done anything as far as personal growth was concerned. I had never really looked in the mirror and analyzed my behavior and my confidence. So I just became totally fascinated with the whole study. I went to a gazillion workshops, boot camps, seminars, events, you name it. And I really set off on this path to understand social skills at a really deep level. And I met some crazy people along the journey, had a ton of experiences as far as my own dating life went. And what I started doing was just kind of keeping a blog of my adventures. You know, I'd go out at night and come back the next day and write up, you know, everything that happened that night. And I'd post it all on my blog just kind of for fun and as a way to connect with other people that were going through a similar sort of journey. And over time, guys reached out to me and they were like, wow, I really love your blog. You seem to be doing pretty well. Do you think you could coach me? And I had never even considered what being a coach meant, or, you know, whether or not I was qualified to coach people or not. That wasn't why I was blogging, but they offered to pay me money. And they said, listen, all I want to be able to do is, you know, meet more women, get more dates, and not be afraid or anxious to talk to the women that I find attractive. And I said, well, I could certainly help you do that. That's what I've been doing. And that's kind of how I became a coach. And that was back in 2008 when I started my company. It's called Inner Confidence. And it basically just transformed from this blog into a pretty large coaching business. And I have a podcast called the Leverage Podcast, which I've also been doing since 2012. And now I coach guys all around the world on whether it's, you know, they want to just get more dates, or maybe it's whether they want to find the one. I'm recently engaged, so, you know, happy to say I did find the one. Or they want to go on, thanks. Or they want to go, you know, and do crazy stuff like I used to, like go on a yacht with a bunch of Playboy models and have a bunch of crazy sexual experiences. I can, you know, totally help guys do that. So regardless of sort of where they are, I usually can help them move from you know, that place to where they want to be. And so that's my introduction, I guess you could say.
How would you coach a total beginner?
Yeah, so first I would explain to him what the dating marketplace consists of, and what women find attractive versus what society thinks, you know, attraction is, because society has it backwards a lot of the time.
Okay.
For example, one thing that I always thought, you know, the only thing that really mattered was how you look, because that's what I knew to be true for myself personally. You know, I would see a girl and I'd either be attracted to her based on how she looked or I wouldn't. And I assumed women looked at men in that same way. And of course they do, but that's not even close to the whole picture. And depending on where you're trying to meet women, like if you're only using online dating to meet women, that's really all they can go off of to get a first impression of you is how good do you look in your photos. So I know a lot of guys that are either really photogenic and they look better in photos than they do in real life, or a lot of guys who look better in real life than they do in photos. So obviously, you know, whichever side you are could be a huge advantage or disadvantage. And the interesting thing though is none of that takes into consideration someone's confidence and the way someone carries themselves, their confidence, their body language, how they command a room, their voice tonality, what they're wearing. That stuff makes such a big difference. That accounts for, you know, at least 50%, if not more, of what makes someone attractive. And obviously that changes a little bit. Men tend to be a little bit more visual than women are. So as men, we are going to be more attractive to the physical stuff at first, but then the confidence and the other things, those intangibles, those matter a lot. So you can improve yourself greatly. And that was kind of what drew me into this line of work is I just kind of thought like, okay, I'm an okay looking guy, so I can hope to date a, you know, pretty decent girl. But obviously the ones I really want, the ones I find the most beautiful, they're not going to be interested in me because I don't look like a model. And that's total bullshit. And proof of that is, you know, my fiance is a model. She's a lot better looking than I am. And, you know, I'm kind of a walking, talking proof that looks don't really matter all that much. And you can really improve your looks a lot, but more so important, you can improve your confidence, your body language, your fashion, and all the other things that go into making someone attractive. So the first thing I do with any client is I help them to really improve their first impression. So I help them with their body language. I help them with their fashion. I help them with their tonality. And, you know, obviously all those things around what do you say to someone, how to start a conversation. And right off the bat, they're going to be way more likely to, you know, have success than what they were doing before, because most of the guys I work with, they just don't really have much of an idea of what they're doing. It's not something they've really put a lot of time and effort into thinking about.
How are you different from Hitch?
So in the movie, of course, it's Hollywood, right? And that was very much focused on the character of Hitch trying to get the other character one specific girl. And he was coaching him on how to attract this one woman that he really liked. And in reality, you know, sometimes clients do ask me to help them to get a certain girl, but that isn't usually my goal. And I tell them that isn't a good goal to have. What you should do is you shouldn't be trying to pick up women. You should be trying to make yourself the most attractive version, and therefore women will come to you. Because if you're focused on how to get something, you're always going to be operating with an agenda. You might come off creepy or disingenuous, versus if you're just trying to make yourself a better version of you, then that's never going to be looked at or viewed at in a negative light. And that will allow you to attract the people that, you know, are a better fit for you anyways. A lot of time guys will get hung up on one specific girl just because she looks a certain way, but that girl might be a horrible fit personality wise. Or she might have, you know, a lot of toxic sort of, you know, tendencies, or it could be a very unhealthy relationship. And an unhealthy thing to do is to really target one person, hire a coach to get that person and do that. That I would not recommend anyone do that.
What's the best way to attract more women into your life?
Well, what I try to tell my clients is you need to develop a dating funnel. And the way to think about that is like a sales and marketing funnel. If you want to grow your business, if you want to bring in customers, you need a funnel, right? You need to first target sort of what you're looking for, your product helps, and then you need to get the word out to those people. And if you have different channels where you can do that, right? Maybe you've got an online sort of marketing channel. Maybe you have an in-person marketing channel. Maybe you have referrals. So the same thing is true with your dating life. Like, so what I teach my clients to do is first set up your online dating funnel, right? And obviously there's sites like Tinder, Hinge, and those all funnel kind of to Instagram and other social media platforms. So women can see that you're like a real guy, but you set up that online dating funnel. So that can bring in women into your life. Then you have a social circle. You have your friends and your family and people that you know that can already vouch for you and they like you. And that's actually the best way to meet women is through your friends or through your family, because you already have that social proof. You're already someone who's quote unquote, vouched for or pre-selected. And then the other way to meet women is by going out and approaching them, whether that's during the day when you're just going about your business, picking up the dry cleaners, going to the grocery store, going to get a coffee. And that's actually my favorite way to meet women because most guys are too afraid to do it. And it's the hardest way, but if you know how to do it and you can do it in a way that's not creepy or weird, it can be incredibly effective and fun if you can get over the anxiety to do it. And then the last way, or the last like major way, is to go out to bars or nightclubs or going to parties, things where single people tend to congregate to, and trying to meet them there. And that can be good if you're the type of guy who likes those sorts of venues. If you like going out to bars or clubs or festivals, and it's a thing you enjoy doing anyways, and you're single, if you're not already using that as an opportunity to meet women, you should be. And the only reason why you wouldn't be is if you're scared to actually talk to them. So I help guys to that are into that sort of thing to go and create more opportunities in those environments. So those are kind of the four. You got online dating, you got your friends and social circle, you have approaching women during the day in a low energy type of environment, and you have approaching women in a night sort of high energy environment. And those are
Yeah.
the four areas of the funnel, and they all funnel into, going on dates and then hopefully making sure you're doing a good job on those dates. That's one thing that guys are really they don't put a lot of thought into the sort of dates they're going on. They're kind of doing the same thing that most guys do, which is go to dinner and go somewhere nice and hope that that dinner somehow turns into something after and eventually leads to, some sort of intimate relationship, but they don't really think about the steps involved in that process. And that's one of the big things I help my clients do is really map out what do you do on a date? Where do you take her? How does the conversation need to flow? What sort of vibe are you trying to create on the first date, second date, third date? How do you communicate with her in between those dates via text or Instagram or whatever sort of electronical means of communication you have? And how to move that relationship forward. So whether you want to date just her, or maybe you want to date a variety of women and just have fun and have a lot of casual relationships, or do that until you find one that you really click with, and then potentially have a monogamous or a more serious relationship. But that's kind of how the process works.
How do you get over approach anxiety?
The best way to become comfortable approaching women is to take baby steps, because we're having to manage our anxiety. And if I tell someone who has a lot of anxiety to go up to a beautiful woman and try to start a conversation, either he's not going to do it, or he's going to do it in a way that where he's so nervous that he's not going to end up with a date or a phone number or anything useful. And he's probably just going to end up feeling maybe bad about getting embarrassed or rejected. So we need a slow, gradual process to make this something that's fun, manageable, and effective, right? And so the first thing I tell my clients to start with is social freedom exercises. And what those allow you to do is stop caring so much about what other people think about you. You stop caring so much about rejection and how you're perceived. And simple things you can do is just kind of what you said, is you can start by, you know, try to ask 100 people within 20 minutes for the time or for directions. And that's, you know, that's pretty hard. That's like, you're constantly going over to new people, and you need to do that in a crowded environment where there's a lot of people walking around. But if you do that 100 saying hello or asking for the time or directions to 100 people, probably around person number 20, you're going to start feeling like this is easy or easier. Around 50, you're going to be like, okay, this is boring, because, you know, I don't even care anymore. I'm no longer like, you start feeling that social freedom I was talking about. And then you'll naturally just start having more legitimate conversations because that anxiety has gone away. And then you might even feel the desire to tell a woman she's beautiful, or tell a guy like, hey man, I really like your hat, you know, cool, have a nice day, right? You'll start to become more warm. You'll start to become more genuine, more open. And you'll notice that people will, your internal state will have a big impact on their internal state. When you have a ton of anxiety and you walk up to someone, you're essentially dumping your anxiety onto them. You're like an emotional, we're emotional creatures. So we connect through our emotions and we can feel other people's emotions very easily. You know, that we have that natural ability to do that. And women tend to do that a lot better than men. So if you've got a guy who's totally nervous and scared walking up to a beautiful woman, she's just going to feel that anxiety, and she's going to be like, I don't want any part of that. I'm good. So we need to get rid of the anxiety first. So another great way to get rid of anxiety is to do things that are just intentionally embarrassing. So like, again, go to a crowded place and just lie down on the sidewalk like you're dead and try to stay there for a minute. And you'll see people will come over and be like, are you okay? They'll think something's wrong. And if you can stay in that feeling of tension where you have these people looking at you and they're worried about you, the longer you can stay in it, the better. Like if you can stay there for a minute, that's usually enough time to stop really caring. So that's a good one. Another thing you can do is you can go to like a McDonald's or a Starbucks. And when you go to pay, you can ask them for a discount, which of course they're going to say no to, but you're still getting in the process of doing things that are considered socially unacceptable. Right? Because the way that we think is that approaching a woman during the day is not an acceptable thing to do. And you're right. It's really not. Like it's not something that people expect. But if you do it in a way that's fun and flirty, that makes her smile, you can get away with it. So once you've done some of these things to get over your social anxiety, that's when I say, now you're ready to start approaching. And for some guys, that could take a few times going out, especially if you have a friend you could do this with. It makes it a lot easier because now you're reprogramming your own thought process to say, you know, when you go over and you start talking to someone and maybe they say, don't talk to me, or they give you a dirty look, and you go back to your friend and he gives you a high five, now you feel good about doing it versus before you might have felt bad from the reaction that you just got. So, you know, if you do have a friend to do it, that's great. And in all the programs I run, I pair people up and I help guys from all different cities around the world to work together. And it's a lot easier to do this when you have that support system. So once you've done that, and you've, you know, gotten to the point where you're like, all right, I'm ready to actually directly, you know, approach some women, then what you really need is, you need to know what to say, right? Because if you try to just go in and wing the interaction, you're not going to feel confident. You're probably going to say something stupid and you're just not going to get anywhere. So it's really important to have kind of what I call like a back pocket opening line. You know, it's in your pocket. You can pull it out. It's obviously not like a piece of paper, but you have it in your mind. And the one that I like to use that I think is a great one for anyone to start with, it's just a simple statement. It's hey, I saw you and I had to risk embarrassing the hell out of myself to come over here and meet you. And of course, if she speaks English as her first language, or if she speaks very good English, and you do too, that's a good line. If she doesn't speak English, it's not a good line because she's not going to understand what the hell you're saying. She's not going to know what embarrassing the hell out of myself means. What I tell my clients, you know, usually I live in Kiev, Ukraine, obviously not now given the war, but usually when my clients come to Kiev to work with me, most of the women there do not speak English. So what I tell them to do is just simply walk up and say, hi, you're very beautiful. I had to meet you. And everyone understands what beautiful means. And simply that the best way to approach someone is by telling them what you're doing, what you want, and by making them laugh, by showing that you understand what you're doing is slightly weird, right? Another great line that can usually get a laugh, again, if English is the first language, is, hey, not to be that guy that like hits on you at the gas station, but I gotta be that guy. And essentially what you're doing is you're showing social awareness, which is funny, which shows that you're not a weirdo, and shows her that, you know, you're probably not gonna take out a gun and rob her. It makes her feel safe. And as a woman being approached by a guy who's bigger than you and probably stronger than you, that's a real fear, right? So you always want to make sure that they know that you're a normal person. And also telling them what you want and being direct about your intentions is really important, because, you know, you can go over to a woman and ask her for the time or directions and then try to spin that into a conversation, but it's usually not going to be received that well, because they feel kind of like a bait and switch. They're like, okay, this guy didn't really need the time and directions. He just wanted to hit on me, but he's too much of a wimp to actually say what he's doing. So in my opinion, and from my experience, if you're going to stop a random woman during the middle of the day in a non-social environment, the best way to do it is by being funny and direct, right? Obviously at a nightclub or a bar where it's normal to go talk to people, I wouldn't recommend doing that. I'd recommend a totally different approach. And same with online dating. I would not recommend that approach. So depending on where you're trying to meet women, you need to tailor your approach to that situation. But like I said, meeting women during the day is, I think, the best funnel you can build as far as dating goes. And if you just go up to women and let's say you don't know how to continue the conversation, you haven't gotten that far. What I tell my clients the first time out is don't even try to stand in the sidewalk and have a conversation with a woman. Just go up and give them this elevator pitch. And the elevator pitch is, hey, I saw you. I think you're beautiful. I had to come meet you. And I'd really love to stay and talk and get to know you if I could, but I'm actually late for a meeting and I got to run. So how about this? Give me your number. And if you don't like me, give me a fake one. And most of the time, she's going to laugh. And she's going to give you her number, or she'll tell you she has a boyfriend, or she'll say, oh, no, thanks, blah, 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 blah. But that, you know, it takes 15 seconds to say that. And if you do that 10 times, there's a pretty good chance, if you're not totally full of anxiety and you're not totally scared because you've warmed up, you're probably going to walk away with at least 1 or 2 out of 10 phone numbers from good looking women. And if you can convert one or half of those into a date, right? If you do this 10 times and you get 2 phone numbers and 1 out of those 10 goes on a date with you, that is a way better return on your time than using something like Tinder or online dating or trying to meet women on Instagram. Because it only takes, like I said, 30 seconds to do one of these approaches. 10 times 30 yeah. is, you know, 300 seconds. What is that? Like 6 minutes or something like that? A little less than 5 minutes. So if you can get a date from 5 minutes of meeting women during the day, that's a hell of a lot better than you're going to do on Tinder, I promise. But guys are too scared to do it, so they don't do it. But all of my clients who go through this process, they almost all quit online dating because they're like, this is so much more effective. It's fun. And the women look exactly like they do because you've met them in real life and you're not seeing a Photoshopped picture on their Tinder profile. So... not only is this a great way to get dates, but it also transforms your confidence. If you can do this consistently, and I tell my clients, if they can do this 25 times a week, their dating life will be radically transformed. They'll go from someone who's involuntarily celibate, where, you know, they're not having sex or they can't get sex, to where they have sex on demand, where, you know, they've got different women that they're dating, where, you know, they can call one of those women up at any time and, you know, have fun and have a nice intimate night. And that process can happen over the course of, takes most guys 3 to 6 months to get there. And it all comes from first improving your confidence, removing the anxiety, improving your appearance and how you look and how you carry yourself, and then going out and executing on this dating funnel.
What if she ignores you?
So if you ever have a woman just kind of turn your back on you, or refuse to respond to what you said, there's no point in continuing to try to get her attention. You've already failed. And that is only going to happen if you approach them and you stop them in the incorrect way. And what most guys do is they don't approach with enough commitment. They'll kind of approach from the side and they'll be scared to interrupt the person. So they'll be meek and timid. Like, oh, excuse me. And she'll just keep walking, right? Because beautiful women do get, you know, approached or harassed, or, you know, people try to get their attention a lot. So if you do it in a way where you're essentially like allowing yourself to be ignored, you're going to be ignored. Like, think about the homeless guy who comes up and asks you for change. If a homeless person comes up and they're like, oh, excuse me, can I have it? You're probably going to be like, oh, sorry, I'm busy. You're going to walk by him, right? But if that same homeless guy like gets in your face and he stops you, but not in a way to scare you, right? Because if he scares you, you're going to be like, yo, you know, you're going to start like protecting yourself. But if they do it in a way where you can't be ignored and it's a socially acceptable sort of distance and the correct sort of volume in your voice, you're more likely, you realize unconsciously, okay, it's better for me to actually communicate with this person than try to ignore them. And that's what you need to do when you approach women. You need to make it easier for her to communicate with you than it is for her to ignore you. And that's all about your approach. So that's one of the biggest things I teach my clients is how to actually stop women correctly. And that requires, like I said, the right amount of distance, whether if she's walking or if she's running or if she's sitting at a cafe on a bench, like those scenarios are slightly different, but it's all about that first impression and how you get her attention. And if you do that correctly, you're probably only going to get ignored like once out of 10 times. You know, some women are still going to ignore you, even if you do everything right, but it's going to be extremely rare compared to what most guys experience. Most guys get ignored, you know, 7 or 8 times out of 10, whereas I'm going to get ignored maybe once out of 10, maybe less.
How to approach a woman walking down the street?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run. And I'm not going to try to walk and just walk a little faster. I'm going to run because, you know, I want to get there as fast as I can. And there's no point in like waiting, right? So I'm going to run and I'm going to run past them a few steps and I'm going to kind of hook around. I call it the hook and swoop. So you run past them and you kind of make like a hook formation and you get in front of them and you kind of put your hand out in a non-threatening way, say, stop, stop, stop. And then as soon as she looks at you and makes eye contact, you kind of count 1,000 and then you deliver your opening line, right? So I saw you and I had to risk embarrassing myself to meet you, right? And it's important that, you know, she's going to be walking. So if you get right in front of her, she's probably going to smash into you and she'll get scared and she might pepper spray you or something. I mean, that's never happened, but you know what I mean? You have to leave a little bit of space in between when you kind of hook around and stop her face to face, because momentum is going to take her closer to you when she's registering in her brain that someone's talking to her. So that's kind of the most important thing. Like imagine, and the way to think about this is imagine she dropped her wallet and you needed to give her wallet back, right? How would you do it? Well, you'd run as fast as you could and you'd jump in front of her without scaring her and be like, yeah, you dropped your wallet here. And she'd be very thankful that you brought her wallet back. And the same thing applies here is she's going to be very happy that you approached her if you do this right, because she's going to be like, wow, this guy made my day. I can't believe I met someone. I wasn't even trying to meet anyone. And now this, you know, attractive guy stopped me and wants to take me out. This is awesome. So if you do this right, you're literally giving them a gift. And that's how you need to think about it in your mind. Not that you're bothering them or not that you're trying to sell them something they don't want. You need to, you know, obviously transform yourself into a guy that they want and then offer yourself. You're the product.
How to get instant dates?
So an instant date, that will happen once you get a little bit more comfortable having conversations, you know, right. So what I recommended earlier was if you're not comfortable with this, you can just kind of do that elevator pitch, right? Hey, I saw you, had to risk embarrassing myself, but I'm late for a meeting, got to run. How about this? Give me your number. If you don't like me, give me a big one, right? That's for the beginners. Now, once you get comfortable doing that, you can then stop doing that and you can try to have a little bit more of a conversation where you go with your opening line. She might have a reaction to that. Like she'll laugh and be like, oh, nice to meet you. And you'll be like, all right. So anyways, I don't know. What do you say to someone who's you randomly meet on the street? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite Power Ranger? What's your favorite flavor of ice cream? No, really. So where are you from? Right. And then she'll be like, oh, I'm from Detroit. Oh, cool. I'm from LA. When did you move here to Vegas? And she's like, oh, I've been living here for a few years, blah, blah, blah. And as she's talking, you want to notice what she's doing with her body. That's the most important thing, because her body is going to tell you everything you need to know. If she's standing there facing you and it's clear that she's not trying to like walk away, like you got to kind of look at her feet, right? The feet sort of moving to where they're going will tell you that, all right, she's being friendly and she's, you know, her lips are moving and she's talking to you, but she's really sort of drawn and her energy is still focused on going away from you and going to do this thing that she was doing. So if she's not doing that, and she's also asking you a question. So the first thing I do, if I don't make that silly joke about the, you know, the favorite color, favorite Power Ranger thing, like, let's say I don't even do that. Let's just say, I say, hey, I saw you and you know, I think you're beautiful. I had to meet you. She'll be like, oh, thanks. And I'll say, so, you know, what are you up to right now? Where are you coming from and where are you going? And she'll say, oh, I'm coming from coffee, met with a friend, and now I'm going to yoga class. And I'll be like, oh, cool. Are you like, you know, a yoga light or one of these yoga obsessed people? Because I know how obsessed people can be with yoga. And she'll be like, no, I'm just kind of like yoga light. And I'll be like, cool. And then I'll keep the silence and it's an opportunity for her to ask me a question, right? Because if I have to ask every question and I'm the one only driving the conversation, that shows a very low investment on her set, on her side of the coin. So then if she says, what about you? Where are you from? Now I'm like, okay, she's asked me a question. So that's a good sign. And her feet are not kind of trying to walk away. She's physically like there and spending time talking to me. So she must on some level have some interest. So if we then kind of continue that conversation, now I'm from LA originally, you know, moved here, got involved in real estate. And yeah, that's kind of my story. What do you do for work? Now she tells you, you know, oh, I'm in marketing and sales. And yeah, I've been working at my company for a few years, blah, blah, blah. Like, hey, anyways, I mean, as much as I love talking on the sidewalk, you got 10 minutes? Let's grab a quick coffee. And then I kind of got to run, but you down? And she'll be like, yeah, okay, cool. Let's go. All right. Now we're going to get coffee. So that's literally an instant date. And, you know, everything I kind of made up there in that conversation is mostly irrelevant. The only thing that matters is her energy wanted to stay and talk to me. And rather than trying to have a longer conversation than it's normal to have on a sidewalk, like once we kind of get to that 2.5-3 minute mark, it's normal to be like, hey, instead of talking here, why don't we grab a coffee at the Starbucks around the corner? You got 10 minutes? If she likes you, she's going to say yes. If she doesn't have time, she'll just say no. Be like, all right, cool. Well, how about this? Give me your number. If you don't like me, give me a fake one. So you should always go for instant dates if she's talking to you and she's not body language motioning that she needs to leave, because it's better to go and talk over a coffee than to stand on the sidewalk or stand in the line at the grocery store or wherever the hell you met her. It's always better to go and, you know, talk over a coffee or some sort of instant date, you know, grabbing an ice cream in the park or walking around after, you know, getting a lemonade, right? Those, now you're kind of mentally on a date, and that's much more attractive and a lot more interesting. So that's what I always recommend my clients who have gotten to a pretty decent level where they're comfortable enough to go over and speak to women during the day and they can do that elevator pitch that feels easy for them. Like, all right, it's time to go out and try to get instant dates, because it's way better to do an instant date than to just get a number and leave. Because odds are, you know, a number is not going to be nearly as solid as a number plus an instant date.
How to transition from instant date to first date?
Well, the instant date is really the first date. you know, it, that is the first venue of the first date. And one thing that I think is the most important thing for, I mentioned this earlier, is guys need to understand how to quarterback a first date, how to execute a first date. And you need to understand the energy shifts in a date. Most dates or most sort of seductions, it's funny, there's kind of like this 7-hour rule. Most people feel comfortable enough to sleep with each other after around 7 hours. And if you look at a lot of ways that couples get together, they usually go on 3 to 4 dates or 2 to 3 dates, and then they sleep together. And then, you know, they start sleeping together consistently, and then they kind of just become a couple. But what happens in those 7 hours is pretty important, because that's going to dictate whether or not you sleep together, of course. So if you do get an instant date, now you're on what I call the first venue of the first date. And the first venue of the first date is always just about simple connection. You're just having a conversation, getting to know each other, small talk, finding out about each other. I call it light rapport or wide rapport, right? You're talking about a lot of different subjects and you're seeing where you have connection points. You know, if I find out she's into golf, then that's amazing, because I'm really into golf. And then we can go deeper and talk about golf, because that's something we're both emotionally invested in. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for common things that you're emotionally invested in, whether that's hobbies or sort of ideas. The one thing you want to stay away from on a first date is politics and religion, because those topics, they can be very interesting and it can lead to really interesting conversation, but it's not very sexual or intimate. And a first date is all about sort of like intimacy and finding out if you have sort of a chemistry and that sexual attraction. And talking about politics will not do that. Talking about religion will not do that. So avoid those topics, but find other connection points, things that you're both emotionally invested in, and talk about those things. So that's the first venue. That's what you would do on an instant date. You'd spend 30 minutes, you know, you'd grab a drink or you'd grab a coffee and you just have like a normal back and forth conversation, just like you'd have if you're catching up with a friend. And as the time goes on, you'll notice that, you know, it becomes more comfortable talking to that person. You start to feel a little bit more at ease. You start to feel like you know them better. And that's when I suggest changing venues. And you could do this on an instant date. If she has time, you know, like why stop at just the first venue? You can go to the second venue. And what I recommend for a second venue is somewhere where you can sit side by side. Right. So your shoulders are able to touch. Right. And the first venue doesn't matter where you're sitting. You can sit across from her. You could sit next to her. You could be, you know, walking around in a park. It doesn't matter. Walking and talking is a great first venue. But on the second venue, you want to be sitting side by side, because that allows you to kiss if you're attracted to each other. You don't want to have to make some big move to go and kiss her, which you would have to do if you're sitting across from her at a table. It'd be very awkward and it wouldn't be very well received. And the second venue of a date is where I like to play the questions game. And the questions game is a great way to just kind of cut through the bullshit and get to know someone on a much deeper level. And it's fun. And it's kind of like truth or dare without the dare. So I'll literally say to her, I'll say, hey, let's play a fun little game. I'm sure you've played it before. It's called the questions game. I'll explain the rules. It's really simple. There's 3 rules. And the first rule is, I ask you a question, you answer, and then I also answer my own question, and then we reverse, right? So you have to answer the question you ask. That's rule number 1. Rule number 2 is you have to be honest, obviously, or the game is boring. And rule number 3 is you have to ask a question that makes the other person either slightly embarrassed or uncomfortable, because this is what makes the game fun and gets us to really get to know each other in a faster way. And she'll be like, all right, cool, let's do it. And then you dive into the game. And the first question I always like to ask is, you know, what's your spirit animal? Just because it's a stupid, silly question about, you know, spirit animals, and it gets people talking about, you know, like what sort of animal they're like. And it's just kind of fun and silly. And then she's going to ask you a question. Then you go from there. The next question I like to ask is, what's the thing you've been in the most trouble for? Or when did you get like the most embarrassed or the most trouble for? And then the next question I like to ask is, tell me about your worst date, right? And I'm going to also have an answer for all these questions too. And I know my answers ahead of time. So it allows me to have, you know, I'm already prepared. I know what I'm going to say, and I know it's going to be something that makes me look good and not make me look like an idiot. I don't know what she's going to ask me though. So that's, you know, that's always going to be interesting. So that's the third question, worst date. The next question is, where's the craziest place you've had sex? And that will always lead to some interesting stories. And then the last question I'm going to ask her is if she has any, like, what are your, do you have any like kinks or say, or crazy sexual fantasies? And that will obviously lead the conversation more in the intimate sexual direction. Now, I might not ask that fifth question if she's uncomfortable with my question about the craziest place she's had sex, right? So, and a lot of the time, if a woman likes me, she's going to ask me about sex in the first, second, third question already. But what you don't want to do is immediately start asking her about sex, because then it just, you just look like a guy who's thirsty for sex and doesn't get a lot of sex, and that's unattractive. So after playing that game, odds are, you know, the conversation is going to be spicy. We're going to be really connecting and talking about some intimate stuff. And she's going to be giving me more verbal, or sorry, nonverbal signals that she wants to kiss me. And that's what I'm going to be really looking for. And the way that she's going to do that is, you know, we're going to be sitting side by side. She might be touching my leg. She might be, you know, touching my arm when I say something, or she might be emphasizing a point and she'll touch me. But if, and what I'm not doing is I'm not touching her a lot. I'm only touching her if she's touching me back. And if two people are attracted to each other, that's probably going to be happening pretty frequently, and it's going to feel comfortable. And if, you know, towards the end of that game, usually around 2.5 hours will have passed on that date, right? 30 minutes for the first venue, maybe like an hour and a half, 2 hours playing this questions game. Time's going to fly because you'll be having fun. Then I might lean over. I'm going to look her in the eyes. I'm going to look down at her lips. I'm going to look back into her eyes. And if she doesn't get weird, I'm going to try to kiss her. Because that's kind of like the, you know, everyone knows if you look at their eyes and you look down at their lips and the back of their eyes, they know what you want. They know that you want to kiss them. And if she wants to as well, she's going to do the same thing. And then I'll slowly move in, you know, 90% of the way, and I'll let her come the next 10% of the way, which is actually in the movie Hitch, which is great advice. Never go the whole 100%. You got to go 90 and let her come the last 10%. Otherwise, you're just forcing a kiss on her and no one wants that. And then we'll kiss. And, you know, now we've crossed that imaginary border where we're no longer friends or acquaintances. Now we have some sort of, you know, intimate sexual connection that's likely going to, you know, go somewhere deeper. And now if you want to end the date there, right, after the kiss and after a little bit more conversation, that's fine. That's a great place to end the date. But if you want to try to continue on, whether that's on this date or the next date, the next venue, the third venue is some sort of couples experience. And that's what traditionally people start with their dates on. And that's why it sucks. Like now for the third venue, if I want to take her to see a show, or I want to take her to a museum, or I want to take her ice skating, or doing something that a couple would do, we're going to have fun doing it because we're going to be interacting and touching each other like a couple. We've already kissed. We already feel comfortable with each other, and more time spent together with that vibe is just going to make us connect faster and easier, which is going to lead to sex and more intimacy. But if we haven't done that and I take her ice skating and we don't have that physical connection, it's just going to be kind of awkward because we're going to be focused more on the conversation while trying to ice skate. And that doesn't work, right? If the focus needs to be on conversation, you want to be just somewhere where the only thing that matters is conversation, having a drink or having a coffee. Even having dinner is not a great place to have a conversation because you got food in your mouth. You're eating. The waiter's coming over and you know, interrupting all the time. You got to look at the menu, figure out what you want while at the same time trying to hold a conversation. That's why dinner dates are shitty first dates. Like, don't take women on dinner dates for the first date. They're terrible. Every guy does it and they don't understand why it sucks. But you know, now you know. Don't do that. You know, do drinks or walk, have a coffee, and then do, you know, somewhere where you can sit side by side in a more like cavernous, quiet environment, somewhere like a lounge, and then do a couple's experience. Then you could go to an arcade or play ping pong or play pool or walk around the park or go to a museum or do something. Doesn't matter what that a couple can do, because obviously couples can do anything. And then during that third venue, right, you're more focused, not on the conversation, you're focused on what you're doing. And odds are the sexual tension and the sexual chemistry will just be increasing, increasing, increasing. One thing I liked used to do is I would do these dates in New York and I'd try to go through all four venues on the first date, which would lead to us having sex at the end of the first date. So first we'd start at a little dive bar next to my house and we'd sit there for 30 minutes. Like I said, do the getting to know you conversation. Then we'd walk 5 minutes to the W Hotel in Union Square and we'd go to the Olives Lounge. And it was a martini lounge. We'd order martinis, sit on the couch, play the questions game. Then we'd kiss. And if she didn't seem like she had to go home, I'd be like, all right, next spot. We'd jump in an Uber. We'd go a few blocks away to a bar called Ace Bar. And we'd have a couple's experience. We'd play like skee ball and the basketball shooting game, pool, darts. They just had a bunch of games, a Street Fighter II old style, like, you know, those arcade games. And we'd be flirting, making out, touching each other, like having fun, acting like little kids. And then, you know, typically if she seemed into it and we're both a little tipsy, usually at this point, had some drinks, I'd be like, all right, next stop. We jump in an Uber. She'd be like, where are we going? I'd say my place. Don't worry. I'm going to be an 86% gentleman. Right. Which is essentially saying like, I'm going to be cool, but obviously I 86% gentleman, not a total gentleman, but mostly a gentleman. Then we'll go back and we'll probably end up having sex and it'll be a great first date, which will hopefully lead to more fun and more sex in the future. And maybe she's my girlfriend or, you know, maybe we both want something casual. And if you're doing that a few days a week, you're going to have lots of women in your life. You're going to have lots of fun sexual experiences, going to meet a lot of cool people, and your life's going to change. So that is kind of how to execute a first date and kind of that whole funnel I mapped out there.
How to get a second date?
If she has to go after 20 minutes of having a coffee, right? If she agrees to go for coffee on an instant date, she's probably going to have 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And that's all the time you really need. And okay, in that time, hopefully you've made a connection, right? Like if you don't make a connection and you just find nothing that you have in common and the energy's off, you're probably not going to get a second date, right? You're probably not going to want a second date with her anyways, because you're just like, I'm not feeling the vibe. But if the energy is good, then you follow up with her via text. It doesn't matter really when you text her. You can text her 20 minutes after you leave. You could wait till the next day or the day after that. It really doesn't matter a whole lot. And, that's another big thing that I cover is how to follow up with women and how to text, because that's so important. I even have a texting course on exactly how to do this with text that you can just kind of copy and paste if you want. But obviously I give you the strategy and the mindset behind that, because if you're just using tactics and canned messages, that can really backfire if you look, you know, like you're doing that. You don't want to look like you're doing that. But I'll follow up with her. I'll make some joke, some callback humor about something we discussed. And if she likes me, she's going to respond back with some, you know, also some humor, which is going to be us just flirting, right? We're both making jokes. That's what we call flirting. We'll have a couple messages back and forth, and then I'll ask her when she's free for a next date. And then I'll go through that dating protocol again. But I won't start at venue two. I'll start again at venue one. I'll repeat the last venue. And that's important. If you take a woman out on a date and you get through two venues, right? When you start the next one, you repeat venue two. Right. So if we did three venues, when I start on the next date, I repeat venue three before trying to, you know, go home to my place or her place. So that's important, is to repeat the last venue, because you need to get acclimated again.
How can I build a social circle?
Once you execute on what I just talked about, once you go on lots of dates, approach a lot of women, and you have this abundant dating life, you're going to have a lot of women in your life that you're sleeping with, right? Whether that's 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, right? Depending on how much you travel. I was doing this in New York back in 2013. And there was like 12 women I was sleeping with on a regular basis. And, you know, I didn't ask them if they were sleeping with other guys. I'm sure they all were too. And they understood that, you know, it was just sort of casual. But it got to the point where I just didn't have like the time and the energy to have that ridiculous sort of dance card, right? My dance card was full, as they said. And the problem was I kept running into the problem where these women wanted to be more than just casual, you know, sex partners. They wanted to be boyfriend, girlfriend. And I wasn't looking for that. I was just looking to have fun and kind of be a playboy. So I was like, all right, what am I doing versus some of these other guys? And at the time, like Dan Bilzerian wasn't popular yet. The only sort of guy I had that was, you know, someone that was doing this was like Hugh Hefner back in the day, or celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio that, you know, obviously women are throwing themselves at him. But so I was like, all right, how do these guys have all this casual, crazy sex with these models and beautiful women and avoid all this drama that comes with the dating life? And that's when I ran into a couple of New York City promoters, and these guys were doing that as well. They had this sort of dating life, and the difference between them and what I was doing is they weren't approaching women. They weren't taking women on dates. However, they did have a massive funnel of women coming into their life through their promotions business. And they would then just organize social events. So they'd organize events at nightclubs, and they'd bring all the girls that they knew, and they'd bring some other rich guys to pay for the event, because most guys who have money don't have women. So if you can provide the women, they'll gladly pay the money. There's a million rich guys out there. There's very few guys with lots of women. So I realized that at a pretty young age that, you know, having access to beautiful women is more valuable than actually having money. And rather than, you know, executing on this dating funnel, you know, once I built the dating funnel, I was like, all right, I kind of solved that thing. But now I want to have more crazy, fun sexual experiences without the drama. So then I just started focused on growing that social circle of women and throwing parties and hosting events. Because what happens at an event is it's kind of like you're on, you know, a bunch of dates at once. Every woman who comes in that event and they see you kind of as the host, you're the guy with the most value there. You have the highest social proof. You're pre-selected. They're going to be attracted to you based on that pre-selection. And if they see you interacting with a lot of women flirting with you, they're just going to be like, oh, well, if all of these women want him, he must be, you know, the hottest guy here. So I want him too. And if you're going to events with young, crazy, hot girls like Playboy bunnies and, you know, Instagram models, these sorts of women who are also looking for fun, crazy, fast sexual adventures, that's the sort of life you can build. And so I partnered up with these promoters and I kind of copied what they were doing. And then I did it on a bigger scale. I moved over to Eastern Europe and I started throwing events with a guy who was he was basically had the rights to shoot the Playboy calendar in Ukraine. So we started putting together events, and he would bring the women that wanted to be in Playboy, and I would bring clients of mine and other guys that were, you know, interested in having these experiences. We'd rent a yacht in the Maldives and we'd do a week-long party, or we'd rent a castle in, you know, a little outside of Rome, a former Pope's castle. We did a party at, and we had a, you know, 5-day party there. We rented a villa in Lefkada, Greece, which is some beautiful islands on the Ionian Sea of Greece, the West Coast. We did like a month-long party there. We did parties in Cyprus. We did a party in Egypt. And this was, you know, kind of, I just started living this crazy lifestyle, just the same thing you would see with Dan Bilzerian, by using this new sort of social funnel or social circle dating strategy, where I'm not taking women on dates. I'm just inviting them to parties. They're seeing me at the parties as the host and the guy with the most value. They're all wanting to hook up with me. And then we just hook up at the end of parties. And a lot of those times that was group sex, threesomes, orgies, right? There'd be a lot of girls who'd want to hook up at the same time. So I'm like, well, you know, I kind of want to hook up with you and you and you, let's go. And it's, you know, those experiences seemed like impossible to me when I first started. I'm like, how do guys have threesomes? Like, what the fuck? Then I experienced so much of that and it became so normal and easy because of this social circle I created, that eventually all that stuff kind of got boring, which I didn't think could ever happen, but it did. It all got kind of boring and old. I was, you know, partying too much, consuming too much alcohol, not sleeping well. It was affecting my health. And I just got bored of it. So eventually I found a woman who didn't party, but she had all the amazing characteristics that I liked, and that was fun. And then I had just kind of got sick of that lifestyle. And so we got into a committed monogamous relationship. That was about a year and 7 months ago. And now we're engaged, and I have no desire to go back and do all that crazy shit. Like, it was fun, been there, done that. And I suggest that every guy, if they want to do that, they need to go do it. Cause if you don't do it and you get into a relationship, there might always be that little part of you that gets kind of drawn back into that. And then you'll end up cheating and ruining your relationship and fucking up your life, especially if you have kids or people that you need to have a good reputation and need to be a good role model for. So that's kind of the progression that I went on, that I think, you know, but most of the guys that I've seen be really hot, happy in relationships, they've done something similar. Maybe they didn't do it to the extent that I was doing it. You know, you don't have to have yacht orgies to do this or to feel like you accomplish this. That was just what I had to do, but it might be whatever version of that is for you to get that. Sow the wild oats, that they say.
What is your craziest moment?
So the craziest moment, this is kind of like a subtle brag too, but you asked, so I'll answer. I was hosting a party in Cyprus, which is a cool island in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea off the coast of Israel, south of Turkey as well. And you know, we rented a big villa there, and we flew a bunch of friends, girls and guys from Kiev, Ukraine. And on the flight, we were on like a, I think it was a Ukrainian Airlines flight, you know, normal commercial airliner. I had never had I was never a part of the Mile High Club, which is having sex on an airplane. I had never done that before. Okay. And I just never, like, I had some girlfriends in the past who always wanted to do it. And I was always just kind of like, oh, what if they catch us? I'm kind of scared. One time I tried to do it and I couldn't get it up, you know, the erectile dysfunction in the back of the airplane, cause I was too nervous. But on this flight, two of the girls were like, let's go in the bathroom in the back and let's have sex. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to join the Mile High Club, I definitely want to do it having a threesome. Cause how many guys on this planet can say that they've done that? Now, I'm sure there's a lot who have done it on like private jets where it's your jet and doesn't matter. But I don't think a lot of them have done it on a commercial airliner in the tiny little lavatory in the back of a plane. You can barely fit yourself, let alone three people. But me and two girls went back there and we had a threesome in the lavatory. And it was hilarious and funny. And I still have the video that we took from it. So I think that's kind of one of the craziest shit that's gone down. And everyone, like, in the back of the plane, like, saw us go in there. They knew what was happening, and I just didn't give a shit at that point. My level of giving a shit and the social freedom of just being on that plane in the first place with 18 young hot girls, right, and just kind of living that lifestyle, you know, none of that shit kind of you know, surprised me anymore. My tolerance for doing weird things was very high, as you could say. So that would be the craziest.
So that's great. So do you have any other stories? So you can like share one or two.
I mean, I have a million, but I tell these on my podcast. I call it Story Time with Robbie. It's part of the Leverage podcast. And just for time's sake, the stories are much more interesting when I go into depth and I tell them. And a lot of them need a lot of buildup. So, you know, if you guys want to hear more crazy stories, you can just go over to the Leverage podcast and click on the ones that say Story Time with Robbie. And those are all crazy stories from my insane-o partying days.
What are the benefits of social circle dating?
Good question. So for every guy, this is going to be different. There's no standard sort of operating procedure. But if you get to the point where you're having that same problem that I was having, which is you have a lot of women in your life that you're sleeping with. You don't want to be committed, but the women continually want you to commit and you keep running into drama. That's when you know you have to make the transition, because otherwise you're just going to keep ending up in these shitty situations. And, you know, how you do that is you have to figure out how to give value in a social circle situation, right? Because you know that there's these social circles of young, beautiful women with usually rich and powerful guys, right? young hot women gravitate towards rich and powerful men. Obviously, with confidence will help. There's a lot of rich and powerful guys that just end up paying the bill and they don't get laid. So you don't want to be that guy, right? You want to be the rich and powerful guy with awesome social skills, right? But you notice that these groups run together. So you're not going to get invited by those guys unless you have something of value to offer, right? In my case, when I met these promoters in New York City, what they needed was they had these model houses where it was easier for them. Like, they were getting paid to bring women to nightclubs. That's what a promoter does, right? They find an event and then the event pays them money to bring good looking people, mostly women, right? Because it's easy to get guys to come and drink. All guys like to go and drink, especially if there's hot girls there. There's no hot girls at a place, guys won't come. If there's lots of hot girls, every guy wants to come. So a promoter's job is literally to bring hot girls to events. And the easiest way for a promoter to do that is to have all the girls like grouped together that they can easily transport them from point A to point B. Cause it's very hard to get young, beautiful women to show up to things, right? It's like herding cats. They're very flaky. So what these guys thought of, which is pretty genius, is they're like, let's create model houses and have these young, beautiful models all live in a house for free. And they can go and do their modeling jobs during the day. That, you know, we have no business what their modeling jobs are. They can do that on their own. We're not offering them jobs. We're offering them a free place to live in exchange for coming out to the nightclub 3 or 4 days a week. So they provided the housing for models. They call them model houses, or mohos for short. If you heard me talk about it on other podcasts or other content I've done, I like to refer to them as mohos. And I call the girls that live in model houses also mohos. So mohos live in a moho. Models live in the model house. And these promoters, when they told us that they were doing that, me and my buddy who kind of met them, we met them out at a bar and we just kind of clicked with them. We're like, these guys are social beasts. And that it was easy to see that vibe when you're in this sort of energy, you know, which guys are doing really well. And we just like ended up grabbing a coffee with this guy, Ben, at the Starbucks. And he was like, yeah, so that's kind of what we're doing. And we're like, well, that's interesting because we have vacation rentals in New York City. We were running an Airbnb business along with our coaching business. And that's a whole nother story and a whole nother product that I sell is I teach guys how to set up a passive income streams using Airbnb arbitrage, which is essentially finding a place, living there for a month, convincing your landlord that to allow you to rent it out short term on Airbnb, and then turning it into a little hotel and running that mini hotel operation. So that's what we were also doing in New York City at the time when I was living there. We were doing the dating coaching stuff and we had this little Airbnb side hustle. And when the guys told us about these model houses, we said, hey, do you need more model houses? Because we have apartments that we could convert from Airbnbs into model houses. And they're like, yeah, we do. It's harder for us to find good places for model houses because you need like 3 to 4, 5, 6, 7 bedroom places. The more bedrooms, the better, right? And we had like a 5-bedroom place in New York City in Union Square. So we're like, all right, well, we will allow you to use that place as a model house. And in exchange, you have to allow us to come to the nightclub every time for free and have access to these models. And you have to pay us rent. So it was both a business transaction and a, you know, an awesome social benefit for us. And that's the angle that we found is we provided housing for these model houses. And, you know, some guys that I've worked with, their way of getting into it is to start like modeling agencies. It's usually involving some sort of modeling or, you know, if you want to hang out with hot models or girls that want to be models, most girls who are quote unquote models aren't really fucking models. They're just fake models. You know, they're just hot chicks with Instagram followings or they're bloggers now. Now they usually say they're bloggers. But you need to be either a photographer or someone in the modeling industry or someone in the promotions industry or the owner of a nightclub or the owner of a yacht or the owner of this or the owner of that to get access to this. And like I said, it's going to be different for every guy. You have to find out where you can offer value and provide that value. And then in exchange, you'll get access to these sorts of social circles. And the more value you provide and the more fun you are as a guy, the better your social skills are, the more you can play in these environments and have influence and the power to build that even bigger. Once I started doing the Playboy parties, you know, that shot my value through the roof because every girl wants to come to a Playboy party. Every girl wants a free week-long trip on a yacht, right? So I just had nonstop women coming into my life through my Instagram. They'd see my photos, or through other girls that would come on the other trips, and they'd be like, Robbie's so awesome. He throws these awesome parties. I want to come back. You have to bring your friends. So it just got to the point where it was just overwhelming, right? I never had to approach after that. It would be stupid to approach, actually. But, and the difference is kind of like, I like to say it's hunting versus farming. When you first get started in the stuff and you're going on lots of dates and you're doing approaching women, doing day game, that's hunting, right? You're going out and you're hunting. Yeah. But eventually, if you want to switch out of that, you got to change to a farming model. And that's what Social Circle is. But you don't get to do farming until you become a really good hunter, because farming won't work unless you know how to hunt. So a lot of guys will be like, oh, yeah, I want to skip that approaching stuff. That sounds hard. That sounds like anxiety. I want to just do Social Circle. I'm like, no, sorry, bro. You don't get to do that. You got to put in the hard work and become a top grade hunter. And then during that process, you'll find out what your value is. You'll become more confident and you'll be able to play in these Social Circle leagues and do this crazy shit if that's what you want to do.
Okay. So how was it different?
How is Social Circle dating different?
If you're on a date, you know, you're on one-on-one, you're going through that dating protocol. You know, I literally have an ebook PDF. It's called The Dating Protocol. You can download it for free on my website and it'll show you how to run a date. But if you're doing Social Circle, you're not going to be going on dates. You're just going to be going to events, the events that you're throwing, the events that your buddies are throwing. You're going to meet women at those events and you're usually going to be meeting lots of women, and you're not going to take them on dates, because if you do take them on a date, what are you saying? You're saying, I want to date you. I want to be with you. I want to be your boyfriend. Right. Or you're saying, I don't want to be your boyfriend. I just want to fuck you. And I'm an asshole. Right. That's kind of like how those sort of players are perceived. So you don't want to be a player. Right. So rather than take women on dates, host parties. And during those parties, women are going to be throwing themselves at you. They're going to be flirting with you, trying to kiss you, trying to get you alone. And the ones who like you are going to stay to the after party. And you can just hook up with them at the after party, whether that's one of them or two of them at a time, or, you know, whatever. It's kind of up to you what your sort of sexual appetite is. But if you hook up with them at a party, you don't have this sort of dating obligation that you might have if you took her on a date, right? If you take a girl, what one mistake guys will make is they'll start doing Social Circle, then they'll start taking the girls that they like on dates. And then, you know, they'll of course have sex with them after the date. And then the girl will come to the next party and get all pissed off that you're flirting with other girls at the party. And you're like, wait, why am I dealing with this drama? I thought I was doing the Social Circle to avoid this drama. It's like, well, no, idiot. You took her on a date and you did that to get in her pants because you wanted to fuck. And now you're wondering why. Now she's getting jealous. Of course she's going to get jealous because you gave her that attention and now you're taking it away and you're focusing it on someone else. Like, jealousy is normal.
That's like backfire.
Yeah, it totally backfires. So you don't get to do that. You cannot take women on dates if you want to do no drama, Social Circle dating or fucking, I guess you could say. You can only have sex when they are trying to have sex with you. And that takes a lot of willpower. If you watch Dan Bilzerian's interviews or other guys like that, it's like you're constantly saying no to sex when you're in that situation, right? But sex is the easiest thing in the world to get. It's like constantly being thrown at you because all the women there want to fuck you. But you're only having sex with the ones where you're like, all right, she's not going to be drama. She's cool. She's down. Like, you know, she's not going to give a shit if I have sex with her friend. And then you're like, all right, that's fine. Now I can do that. Right. Cause you have to protect your reputation. If you ever have the reputation that you're a player, an asshole, the whole thing will fall apart. Cause the only thing that matters in Social Circle is your reputation. So if you're a creep or you're an asshole or you're a player and you do these things, it's going to spread like wildfire. Your reputation is going to be shit. No one's going to go to your events. And this thing that you've spent your hard time and effort building is going to collapse in your face. So you have to be very strategic who you have sex with, and you have to make sure it's not going to lead to drama. And you only have sex when she's like begging for it and it's not in a dating environment. You wait till the end of a party. You do it at the after party. If it's an orgy, that usually makes things easier, right? If you're having sex with a girl and two of her friends, she's not going to be jealous the next time she sees you at a party and you're flirting with other girls. Cause it's like, yeah, he's just that kind of guy. He's just a fuck boy. Right. And I'm not going to get jealous over a fuck boy because, you know, I'm a fuck girl in that situation. Right. So the way you avoid drama is by not taking them on dates and not showing that you're interested in that sort of connection.
When did you start hosting events?
So when I was in New York and working with the promoters there, we started doing trips to the Hamptons in the summer. So I'd rent a house on Airbnb, you know, 10 bedroom house, a big mansion out there. And all the girls I was meeting through, you know, the promoters and the bottles and the model tables and, you know, going to nightclubs, and even some of the girls I had, you know, had left over from day game who were just kind of casual, fun relationships. So we'd invite all the girls. We'd invite cool guys that we were friends with. We invited some clients as well, because it was a great place for them to kind of learn and see all this stuff in action. Rent a house, go out for 4th of July weekend, you know, do 3-day weekend and just have a big weekend long party. And those were, you know, started doing those in the summer of 2012, I think, 2013. And then I organized a trip to Eastern Europe. I brought three of the models that I had and some clients, and we just kind of toured around, went to Budapest, Belgrade, Istanbul, Thessaloniki, Greece. And we did like a 2-week trip around, went to some different festivals, and that was a big success. And then we did a trip down to South America. We did Rio de Janeiro and Florianopolis, Brazil. That was 2 weeks down in Carnival, January, February, 2016. Then did that same Europe trip the next summer in 2017. Then in 2018, I met the Playboy guy through mutual friends in Kiev, and we kind of clicked immediately. It was very obvious, you know, when you're living this lifestyle, when you meet other guys that are doing the same thing, you just kind of get a feeling for it. You know who's real and who's not once you're a seasoned sort of player in this industry. Not a player in terms of sex, like I was saying before, just someone who's consistently in those arenas, right? So I was like, all right, this guy's real. He knew I was real. He invited me to his birthday. I came to the birthday. I brought another buddy who contributed money. We had a great time. And then he started, you know, he trusted me at that point. And he was like, all right, you want to do some of these Playboy events? And I'm like, yeah, I can definitely bring guys and bring girls. He's like, you don't need to bring girls. I have all the girls. I have the million girls who want to go on a Playboy calendar shoot. But I need guys. I need guys to help like pay, because it's expensive as fuck. And the girls aren't going to pay, of course, because they're just young models, right? So, you know, we have to pay for the photo shoot and the accommodations. And he's like, you know, some girls pay, but that's very rare. So, and I had a lot of, you know, guys I knew in the industry that were looking for those sort of crazy parties. So we joined up and started doing the Playboy events. And that was in 2000, that started in 2018. And we did a you know, those like once, it's usually once or twice a month for like a year and a half. And then by like right around the time Corona started in 2020, you know, I had been doing that already for almost a year and a half, close to 2 years. And I was just kind of sick of it anyways. So that was that was when I started winding down and looking for something different lifestyle wise.
Okay. So like, how did COVID like affect your lifestyle from that?
It didn't actually. When COVID happened, it actually made things easier for me, because when I was hosting parties, especially in Kiev, you know, I usually wouldn't host a party on a Friday or Saturday night, because then I'd be competing with nightclubs and other venues, right? And I would usually do house parties or private parties. And so a lot of girls wouldn't come because they wanted to go to club XYZ, or they wanted to go to Closer or Chi, or, you know, some Sky Bar, whatever, the popular clubs in Kiev at the time. And when COVID happened, all those places were closed, but people still wanted to party. And I didn't give a shit about COVID rules or lockdowns or any of that nonsense. So I just started having more parties. But on Friday or Saturday night, I had a huge loft in Kiev. My buddy would bring in his DJ equipment. I'd have a bunch of lights and we'd make our own nightclub. And we were having these insane parties in the beginning of 2020. And you know, some of the ratios of these events, we had like 20 girls, 5 guys at one event, which is too much. Usually you want to aim for a 2 or 3 to 1 ratio of women to men. You always want more women because you don't want a sausage fest, and no woman wants to be in a party with too many guys. No matter how horny she is, too many guys is just too many predators. It's always better, even for girls, to have more girls, they say. So we were hosting these events, and yeah, COVID didn't matter. COVID just made our events more popular. So, I just got sick of doing them after a while.
How do you organize parties?
Well, the first thing you need are the people, obviously. And because I was doing much bigger parties all the time, you know, these week-long photo shoot events, I knew, you know, 50% of the hot women in Kyiv. I knew tons of guys that like to go to these sorts of events. So that was easy. Like, getting the people there was easy. The other part is simply, you know, having a good space and controlling the ratio, controlling the number of people. And I would like to keep them small because, you know, I think if you have more than 30 people at a party, it just becomes too big. You can't meet everyone anyways, and there's just not a big point to do it. So we'd keep it to, you know, 20 to 30 people maximum. That's about as big as my 4-bedroom place in the middle of Kyiv could comfortably hold. Like I said, I brought in my buddy who liked to DJ. He had a, you know, DJ setup, speakers, table, all that. I would provide the lighting. So I just got some cheap, like, lights on Amazon, sort of these multicolored lasers that are very inexpensive, but they're really cool. You place 4 of them in the corner and you create this sort of nightclub-like environment. And then we also had shisha. We would have a shisha. We'd rent a shisha company to come in. They would come in and provide, like, the, you know, the setup, the shishas, and they would do the coals and the tobacco, and kind of like one person could cater the whole party for shisha. So we'd have 5 or 6 shishas going, which is super popular in, you know, in a lot of places now. They were mostly just popular in the Middle East and Kyiv and Ukraine, Russia, but now they're very popular, getting more popular in the West too. And then, you know, obviously have enough drinks for everyone as well. So this is the main thing, is make sure you have good music, good things to eat and drink. We didn't provide anything to eat, but lots of stuff to drink, lots of stuff to smoke, a number of people there, and then just make sure to control who we came. You know, we wouldn't invite, we'd be very selective about who we invited, and you know, make sure girls are only bringing girls that we said could come, and make sure guys know that they can't bring other guys or they have to get permission.
What is your lifestyle like now?
So, as I said, I kind of got sick of that partying lifestyle. I wanted to, you know, I'm 39 now. I'll be 40 in June. And like a year and a half ago, I had, you know, spent all of my 30s partying, you know, but I started kind of, like I said, I got into this stuff at the age of like 23. But in my 20s, it was more of like a, you know, a sort of journey of becoming more of a confident guy. And most guys don't really get to the point where they're doing really well until they're like early 30s. That's when you have a little bit of money, you have some experience. You know, guys mature a lot later than women. So I kind of hit my stride right around the age of 29, 30. And that's when I was really running around New York, going on tons of dates, approaching a ton of women. And I did that until I was like 32. And then I got into the social circle stuff kind of around the age of 33. And I did that hardcore from like 33 until 37. So like 4 years of a lot of partying, a lot of fucking, a lot of this stuff. This was like my life. And I was making money doing this too. I was coaching and throwing these events. So it was all sort of intertangled, and I had my Airbnb business as well. And that was generating passive income on the side. So my, you know, I didn't have to show up to a job. I didn't have anyone to report to. My life was to party. And as anything, even if it's fun, you can still get sick of it. You know, if you eat chocolate cake, as good as that is, if you eat it every day for, you know, even a month, you're going to get really sick of chocolate cake. It's just how we are in life, right? We get sick of things we do over and over and over, no matter how cool or awesome they sound to other people. We get sick of them. And that's what happened to me. I just kind of got bored of it. And as I was getting bored of it, I was looking more and more for a woman who kind of shared my values, who was still fun and I could meet in these party environments, but wasn't hooked on the party environments. Cause that was kind of what I was meeting before. I was meeting these girls that they seemed really cool and down and good to be good girlfriends, but then they wouldn't be, they would cheat or they would be untrustworthy or they would just be, you know, too addicted to partying and drugs or whatever. Just, you know, not quality sort of people to have a stable relationship with. And then when I did meet, you know, my fiance, I was like, wow, this is totally different than I had experienced dating really anyone in the past. And we just kind of naturally moved into more of a committed relationship. And I was happy to leave that lifestyle behind. And now we just kind of, we have two dogs and we travel around. This winter we've been in Turkey to avoid, we left Ukraine in January to avoid the winter. I'm glad we left because we ended up avoiding the war as well. But we went down to Turkey to play golf. So that's kind of what we've been doing since. And, you know, we're waiting to get her fiance visa. We'll probably move back to the States and, have start a life there in the near future.
What does freedom mean to you?
Freedom. Doing what I want, when I want, with who I want, whenever I want, I guess. Okay. I don't want to answer to anyone. I don't want anyone to tell me what to do. I want to be the captain of my own ship. That's true freedom is, you know, I make the rules, I call the shots, and I pick what I commit to. It doesn't mean I'm an irresponsible, uncommitted asshole that just does whatever the fuck I want when I want. That's just being a turd, right? Like, I do commit to things. I do. If I say I'm going to do something, I keep my word. And I'm very careful what I commit to, because if I commit to something that sucks, that really puts a burden on my freedom and makes me not feel free and makes me not want to do it. Then I have to break my commitment, and that's really shitty. So if you want to live a life of freedom, you have to be very careful what you say yes to, because it's a lot harder to say no, at least for me, than it is to say yes. And that's what I have to be aware of, is making sure I say yes to the right things and no to mostly everything else.
So, yeah. So great. It's great to meet you, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, you got it. Yes, yeah. good to chat. Thanks for the good questions. It's fun.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.